whistle while you work. Put on that grin and start right in to whistle loud and long. Just hum a merry tune.
Welcome to Company Break, a program dedicated to the companies and organizations in our local area, giving them a chance to talk about what services they can provide for you, our WCRI listeners. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Company Break. This first weekend in June, it's a pleasure to welcome into our studios representatives of the Glass Station Studio and Gallery, and with me is Jen and Eben, and they were here last year about the same time, right, Jen?
We were.
Yeah. So we're bringing you back for an encore presentation, as they say.
Full circle.
By popular demand. And most of the credit goes to Eben because he was sensational last year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't even remember.
Don't even remember being sensational, do you? But we talked a lot about the Glass Station, found out about many things that happened. But let's review for everyone. The Glass Station is located in beautiful downtown Wakefield, correct?
That is right.
All right. And let's start with the two of you, now that people know where you're coming from. Where did you come from before that? Eben, did you always live in the Wakefield area?
I grew up in Newport.
In Newport.
And okay. I moved to Wakefield around 2000.
Okay. And that's a long time to be there. I mean, you're mm-hmm. only 30 years old now.
And, right. almost 50.
Really?
Yep.
Well, you look very good, Jen. You're very lucky. He looks good.
I am. He's young and handsome as ever.
But I don't know why he's with a 20-year-old. But anyway, so you grew up in that area, then moved in 2000, roughly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And always been in the art business, if you will?
Pretty much. I started blowing glass when I was 15. It was an after-school job, and I liked it. And then when it was time to go to college, I thought, well, I'm already doing this, so why not keep doing it?
Keep doing it.
Maybe
well,
I'm just really stubborn.
It seems to be successful, so
yeah.
Why not keep at it, right?
Right.
All right. And Jen, how about you? When did you start in the business?
I've been blowing glass for 21 years now. Yeah, I think I started in 2022, and that was out in Colorado. I started working in a place very similar to the Glass Station and worked there for, 12 years, 13 years?
You didn't start in 2022. That was last year.
That was last
year. Oh, what did
year.
I say? Oh, 20. I'm that's sorry, right. 2002.
2002, that's right. I was going to say 20. That doesn't sound right either. But see,
yeah.
Eben the Marvelous caught that right away. Right.
Yes, and, he sure did. He's
and
quick like that.
All right. So so it's been, but you didn't know each other at that point, right?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So Eben and I met in 2011 in Philadelphia at a trade show. So both of us obviously were glass blowers and we had our own booth there, or we each had our own booths there. And, we met on the loading dock and he wooed me with chocolate covered pretzels.
I love yep. being wooed.
Yep.
That's excellent. All right. So the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the gallery that's located in Wakefield. Let's get started with that. That's It's obviously a store, if you will, for lack of a better term, where people can go in and purchase works that you've both done.
Yes. And yeah. There's both of our work, and then we also have the work of, I think it's up to 17 other glass artists as well. So a really wide range of work from...
Now, if someone, for someone like me who has never attempted or would probably ever attempt to do something like you do from the artistic vein, if someone's making a glass vase, is there a definite distinction between what you would do, Jen, and what Eben would do and 17 other people?
Absolutely. All yeah. Right,
so mine are always straight.
No! That was mean. Mine are straight too, jerk.
I know.
So, but I mean, there's a distinction. Each artist would do it, would do something, if you wanted a bud vase, for lack of a better term, everybody would have a different slant on that. There's no recipe, if you will. Everybody makes it, 8 inches tall, and they make it 1 inch wide, nothing like that.
No, nothing like that. No, it's a really personal craft, and I think it's really an expression of the person. I think it's like what is going on in their head, their creativity, and then how their hands actually express it. I mean, two people can be trying to make the exact same thing, and they'll still look a little bit different because the processes will vary. And Eben and I are very different from each other that way. He was classically trained in Italian glassblowing techniques, and it's very technical.
Which is why they're always straight.
Yeah, okay. And so do you find yourself making, if you were to make something like that, I'm just picking that object for lack of, you know, everyone can relate to it, would you make 10 of them and they would all pretty much be the same, or would each one of your own be different?
I think they'd be a little bit different.
Yeah.
So
for me, I'd have to have it. It's going to be 1 inch wide. It's going to be 8 inches tall. And I would be exact because that's the way I am. But artistically, you don't do that necessarily.
I mean, I feel like when we're making something for production, something that it's not just a one-off. We're going to make several of them.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you kind of get your process dialed in, and then you do the same thing every time, and you get pretty close to the same thing every time.
I call it triangulating.
Yeah, exactly.
First one is maybe a little not what you want, and then it you triangulate in by like the third one, everyone is really close.
Okay, so it's not a trial and error, but just a slight improvement perhaps.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
All right. And one of the things that are pretty much the same is one of the things you're famous for, which is the glass floats. They're all pretty much look the same, right? About basically the same size.
Mm-hmm.
And tell the audience what I'm talking about, because they probably don't know what a glass float is if they hadn't heard the show before.
A glass float is it's my rendition of a Japanese fishing net float made out of glass.
About the size of a tennis ball, roughly.
Yeah. I say an orange, but tennis ball too.
A little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes grapefruit.
And then what's become famous about those is years ago you started a little hide-and-seek adventure.
Right, called the Glass Float Project. And we started that in 2012. Is that right, Jen?
I think it was actually 2011, the year that we met was the first time he did it.
It was 2022.
Yeah, right.
2011 or 2012, back somewhere around there.
Yeah. And when I started that, it was going to be a 1 or 2 year thing. I just thought it'd be a fun little thing to do, and
what is it? Exactly?
The world and the universe had different plans, and now it happens every year, and it just keeps going on.
And it happens by you're hiding them in different places around the state, or
where? On Block Island.
Block Island. Okay.
Yep. Between today, this morning we hit a bunch, so it starts today. And they're hidden in little batches all the way until Columbus Day weekend in October.
Okay, so after today, they'll be, if people, hypothetically, let's say you hid 50 of them.
Right.
And 50 were found, you would come back some other time during the summer and do some more.
Right. But we do 550, so there's a lot. And every year, some aren't found, so there's quite a few that are just under a log or under the sand that have never been found and maybe never will be found. And it's all a big mystery.
Someday, 100 years from now, someone will say, look at this.
Right.
Yes, some of them we hide really well. So like the idea being that nobody's going to find them anytime soon. And we're kind of hiding them for like archaeologists from 1,000 years from now.
Right. And they have numbers on them, right?
They do.
So they can be tracked, and you can what does a person do, or what would you like them to do if they find one?
They go on to theglassfloatproject.com, and there's a link to register it. And that site, that registry, is run by the Block Island Tourism Council. So once they register it, you know, you put your name and where you found it. We have kind of a better idea of how many have been found and how many are still out there in the wild, so to speak.
Do you think some people have found them and don't register them?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But that's not what we want. We want people to register them so we know that they've been found and where they were found and maybe Is there a spot on there to say how they were found? Like, I was out walking with my dog, and my dog tripped over it or something, some kind of cute story.
Yeah.
People will say what trail they found it on, or what beach, or maybe they found it in a tree on a certain trail. But you can't leave like a paragraph story.
No, okay.
It's like a brief sentence.
Couple of lines.
Couple of lines, all right. And these are all hidden in spots that are not going to be like on the street where people are walking and could step on one, but they're hidden in
public areas.
Public areas.
But not private property and not below the high tide line, because then they get washed away.
Okay.
So mostly on the beaches and on the Greenway trails.
Right.
So I actually just did a talk about this, so I have all sorts of figures. There's 17 miles of beaches on Block Island, and you can actually walk around the whole thing if you wanted to.
Sure.
Then you have to.
I've pretty much done that over a period of years, because I've been going there for, this will be my 59th annual summer.
Oh my gosh.
Spend a weekend on Block Island. Nice. So I've been doing it a long time. So yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the island is only, you know, a few miles wide, longer than wide, but 17 miles of beach.
Yep, 17 miles of beach and almost 30 miles of Greenway trails too. And those are my personal favorite place to hide them, is on the Greenway trails, because it's such a great way to explore the island. I mean, you can walk from one end of the island to the other, and all sorts of little labyrinthine trails in between.
Does Rodman's Hollow get into that?
Oh, yeah. Love Rodman's Hollow.
Okay. So did you put any there today? Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, okay. So now you never tell anybody where to look, right?
Correct.
All right. Yeah. So they're on their own.
Yeah.
They have to investigate, and then they keep that, and it's a nice memento of their time on the island.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully they saw something that they've never seen before, saw a different part of the island that they've never seen before.
That's excellent. All right. And that goes from when to started today and ends when
Columbus Day weekend is when they're stopped being hidden. But you can go out
officially
in the winter and
find the ones that haven't been discovered yet.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Where it's nice and quiet.
All right. Well, there's lots more things we want to find out about the gallery itself, the store, some other things you're doing as far as a fellowship we want to talk about. But we'll do that right after this break. Welcome back to Company Break. I'm Mike Mano, very happy to be sitting with the owners of the Glass Station Gallery and Studio, Jen and Eben, and we have been talking about their project that goes on Block Island, the Glass Flotation Project, which we think we pretty well got that described. I want to talk a little bit more about the gallery itself. And is this open to the public 5 days a week, 4 days a week?
7 days a week, actually.
7 days a week.
Yep.
Wow, you're dedicated.
We are.
7 days a week, pretty much every day of the year, probably maybe not Christmas or Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but yeah. I think, you know, we take Independence Day and Thanksgiving and Christmas and
So you've got a vacation day coming up, Independence Day.
Yes,
well,
we do.
There you go, just a month away. All right. So the gallery is located in Wakefield. Whereabouts?
We're right on Main Street, kind of at the west end of Main Street, next to the Muse Tavern.
Okay.
Where Napa used to be.
Yeah, where Napa used to be.
Napa Auto Parts.
Yep.
Okay. And that's how the facility got its name, or this is a new building?
This is new for us. When I started the Glass Station, it wasn't an old gas station. And I just thought, I have to call this place the Glass Station, being an old gas station. But then when we moved, I felt like I had the name recognition of the Glass Station, so I had to keep it.
Yeah.
But before it was Napa, it was a car dealership, and there's our mounts in the floor from old car jacks.
Wow.
So it still kind of has a glass.
It's a little bit of a historical building, then.
Yeah. But it still has a gas station vibe.
Gas station vibe for glass products. And so what would people see when they walk in the door? Are they going to see just your art pretty much, and the 17 others? Or are there other products available?
Yeah, so we're a glass and jewelry gallery. So probably 60 to 70% of the glass is made by Eben and I and our team. And then the rest is friends of ours, basically. The glass blowing community is a really small, tight-knit community, and everybody kind of knows each other. So when we got this big space, it's over 1,800 square feet of display space. We brought in the work of a bunch of our friends, too. And we're up to about 17 different glass artists now, and all different kinds of glass. There's blown glass, there's fused glass, lamp-worked glass, which is like little sculptures.
Lamp-work glass.
Lamp-work, yeah. So it's called lamp-work because it's done over a torch.
Okay, so the glass is kind of stretched, if you will, in layman's terms?
Yeah, yeah. They start with cold glass and they heat it in small portions and stretch it and pull it and sculpt it, basically. Yeah,
okay.
If you've ever been to see the Blaschka glass flowers at Harvard, those are a very early example of lamp work.
Okay.
Yeah, they're absolutely amazing. So, Everybody should see them.
Yeah, just a different technology, just a different way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You mentioned the word you or your team. That means there's probably other people that are in the building besides the two of you?
Yeah, so we have two other people who help us blow glass. We do most everything that we make in a team of three, or sometimes we do just a team of two. So when we're kind of like in production mode and making a whole bunch of a single product, it's a little bit like an assembly line with all three people working together on a single project.
Oh, and is this something that people can watch happen?
It is, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds very interesting. So if you'd like to go down and watch, they can do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, we're always blowing glass between 10 and 4, and we take a little break at noon for lunch. But you're always welcome to come through the doors and see some glass being blown.
Now, can they buy whatever you're making, or is it
they can.
Usually consigned for something else?
No, they just have to wait until the next day because the glass has to cool really slowly overnight.
Can they sleep overnight in the gallery?
No. Unfortunately not.
Okay. All right. So they can watch it and then come back the next day and get it.
Exactly.
That's very cool. Are the things that are ever personalized, do you ever do anything on consignment? Or someone say to you, I want this 8-inch bud vase or whatever?
That
happens.
I ask a lot of questions, make sure I can make it, and then it can happen.
Any opportunity to possibly replicate something that they remember in their past or something like that? Do people do that too? Like
sure.
My grandmother used to have or something?
It's possible.
Yeah, that's something that could be done.
Yeah. I don't copy like current artists' work, but a shape or a form with different colors. Sure.
And when different colors, how does glass is clear? Has anyone told you that?
It's clear?
Yeah.
That's my favorite color.
Clear. No, but so there are, how do you get colors into the glass?
So we melt in our furnace clear glass only, and then we add color to it. And that we add that in either a bar form. So we order a bar of, let's say, blue and chop a little chunk of it off and then pick it up at the end of the pipe. And then we blow the bubble out of the pipe into the color. And as it expands, it stretches out into the clear and it looks like the whole piece is blue.
Wow.
And then we also will use frit, which is like a crushed glass. Mm-hmm. And that's like putting sprinkles on an ice cream cone or Jimmy's.
Okay. When you say chop a piece off of the bar,
I'm
just imagining myself trying to do that.
It's tricky. We use a chisel and a sharp, acute angle underneath the bar and the chisel on top and a hammer and whack, and it just breaks off.
Now, is there waste from something like that? I mean, would you get shards of glass that you can't use, or does that all go into a pot somewhere?
That goes into a pile that Jen calls the everything bagel mix.
Everything bagel mix.
Every color we use, we have little chips, goes into this pile, and then it's a color mix we use.
And you can make something out of that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, cool. So there is no real waste as such.
Not really, no. Yeah. And we always try to recycle what we can.
There you go. All right. All right, I want to find out a little bit about bumblebees.
Yeah.
Or bees, I guess. Bumblebees is what everyone imagines when they think of bees, but... we have some Rhode Island bees that you're friendly with.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to be a friend to them.
Okay.
Yeah, so one of the, how do I say that? One of our most popular products are our glass bees. And those are about 6 inches wide, 6 inches long. They're bigger than a Christmas ornament. It's more like something that you would hang in your window or maybe hang on a hook in your garden.
Now, are they hollow or are they heavy like a paperweight?
They're hollow.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, these glass bees were actually the first thing that I ever designed when I started making my own work. So they've been a product that I've been making for a very long time.
Now, originally they were Colorado bees.
That's right. Okay. Now they're Rhode Island bees.
They have a different accent now.
And they wear cowboy hats. So,
yeah. So when I moved here in 2014, we picked up a few galleries that started selling just ridiculous numbers of these bees. And it became something that we were making all the time. And so we decided that we wanted to have a sort of philanthropic aspect to this product as well, instead of just making them and selling them. So we started donating a portion of the proceeds of the bees to, it was called the Planet Bee Foundation. And this was a place out in California that was dedicated to educating people about the importance of pollinators and about bees in particular. And we did that for a few years and started realizing that we really wanted to keep our money closer to home instead of sending all this money to California, where we never actually saw the results. And so I reached out to Dr. Stephen Elm, who is professor of entomology at the University of Rhode Island, and told him that I, you know, wanted to start this fellowship. Mm-hmm. If there was an outlet for this money. So he got very excited about it and talked with the URI Foundation, which does all of the fundraising for the university. And we decided that the Glass Station was going to fund this fellowship, the Glass Bee Fellowship. And this is for an undergraduate student. The fellowship is awarded in May. This year it went to Kate Perzanowski. And so Kate is going to be working with several others from the Department of Entomology, two other researchers who were coastal fellows when they were undergraduates as well.
Yeah.
So she's going to be helping them with bee research, and they are studying in particular a native bee from Rhode Island called Bombus fervidus.
Which I know them.
They're the cutest
great
ones.
Band.
So this is a native bee to Rhode Island that's currently listed as, is it endangered? I don't think it's
well,
endangered.
Well, I think a lot, just the bee population in general is in trouble, right?
Yes, at risk.
It's
listed as at risk.
Right.
Yeah. So Kate is going to be actually out in the field with these researchers, and she's going to be observing the bees and recording what flowers are in bloom at what time and what effect that has on the health of the bees,
the health
of the bee population.
All right.
So, yeah, so we're really excited about it. It's a 3-month fellowship for her. We're going to be doing fundraising from May to May every year. So we're donating $10 of every bee that we sell to the Glass Bee Fellowship.
So that's something that people can participate in. They go down to the studio, watch you blow something, and then perhaps buy a bee on the way out along with something else they might like, and they're helping the environment.
Exactly.
Excellent. All right. That's great, and that's a good thing to be doing. We like that. And we have just a couple minutes left, and I want to make sure we touch on something that a lot of people might be interested in, and that's classes that you're giving. And is this something people can sign up for, or is there a waiting list?
Yeah, you can sign up. So we just started doing classes again. We stopped, of course, during COVID, and then we got so many requests that we decided to bring classes back. We're running them right now on Saturday afternoons at 4:00. And people who are interested can just go onto our website, and there's a link that says book a class. you can go on there and bring up the calendar and see what sort of availability that we have. And when those classes start filling up, we might start giving a Friday evening class as well. Okay. But so it's a blow your own ornament class. So it's more of an experience than really
it's
like
a hands-on situation.
Absolutely.
This is not just a textbook. This is
nope.
This is the actual doing.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Trial by fire.
Exactly.
Trial by fire. Okay, I like that.
But not in a scary way.
Well, I'm sure some people are probably intimidated at first. I think the average person would look at the both of you and go, what? You do what? Because it's very interesting, and what you create is beautiful. And we have to wrap this up, but I want to make sure everyone is aware of the glass float project that started on Block Island today. Go out and find those orbs and register them. And
be an orbivore.
There you go.
That's what fans of the Glass Float Project are called, orbivores.
Orbivores. All right. Well, that's good. That's a good thing. Evan, thanks for coming in, spending some time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nice to see you again. And Jen, always a pleasure to see you. And we hear your voice a lot on WCRI on the commercials. And so we look forward to that continuing.
Thank you, Mike.
And we'll see the rest of you next time on Company Break.
Whistle while you work.
Thank you for listening to WCRI's presentation of Company Break. I'm Mike Maino, hoping you have a great weekend.